I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 67 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin interviews Jakob Nielsen, the king of web usability. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
I know you've been involved in the world of web usability since pretty much day one. Do you think generally it's improving as time goes on? Or is it getting worse as kind of more sort of distractions come in, you know, kind of Twitter feeds, RSS feeds and the like there? Do you think it's getting better or worse, do you think?
Oh, that's actually a great question. I think if we look at individual websites, I do think it's getting better. There are fewer of some of the most blatant mistakes that were common 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Just to mention one, splash screens that really annoy users, and all they look for is a button that says skip intro. And we saw this in user testing a lot 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And today it's very rare we come across those, at least for big companies. And also, I think, for example, search has gotten much better. So I think there are many, many signs of improvements. On the other hand, I think you pointed out that the internet as a whole has a lot of problems in ever more increasing just volume of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so all these new feeds, for example, we actually did a study recently on feed-based or stream-based media formats. So things like Twitter postings or Facebook postings and those type of things. And the finding there is that users are often quite put off by companies that tweet too much or put too much stuff on Facebook, because they mainly view it as a kind of a personal communication channel, and then they get overloaded. And of course, the same is true even more so for email. And email still remains, I have to say, the most important communication channel for just reaching out to loyal customers in forms of newsletters and promotions and stuff. That said, if you overdo it, you then turn them off. So it's really a delicate balance, and that balance is not really upheld in the total. I mean, certainly some people do it nicely, but in total, users just being barraged. And so as a result, they're developing these kind of defense mechanisms. And the same happens actually with advertising, because banner advertising is not working very well. And we've known this for more than 10 years already. Mm. Actually, I think 13 years. I think I published about this in 97 that ads didn't work well in the web, except for search ads and classified ads. But banner ads, anyway, don't work so well. And so as a result, they're getting to be ever more aggressive, like overlaying web pages, having huge, you know, moving videos, which can be done, you know, technically better now, but in terms of user experience, more annoyingly now.
Yeah. No, it is interesting that you say that. It's like, things have moved forward, that there are, you know, perhaps a lot of those problems you saw initially are in some cases being solved, but then others are coming up that are, you know, creating different problems, but still kind of making the user experience more difficult for users. And really, that, you know, you would hope in this day and age people get a little bit more sophisticated in what they're trying to do with the web, really, I suppose.
Exactly. And again, there are things that are getting better. Sometimes it's the design getting better. Sometimes it's the technology getting better. So, for example, in the early days of the web, we had a lot of problems with download times being very slow when people were dialing up on modems. And today, most people are connecting through more of a broadband connection. And so they tend to get most web pages relatively fast, but there are still some sinners out there that just make the pages even bigger. Yeah. So even with the faster connection, they still take a lot of time. But the main problem, though, nowadays is not so much, let's say, big graphics. It's more sort of more fancy elements, more programmable elements that just take a very long time to appear. So, for example, we did a user test recently of a site that had kind of a slideshow mechanism on the homepage. And it took like about 3 to 4 seconds to download. And you would say that's not a long time, but it was not enough time for the users to actually not look at that part of the page anymore. So we did this as an eye tracking study so we could tell where people were looking. Mm-hmm. And they would look at that bit like just at the top of the page. They would look at that in the very beginning of the visit to the page, which is what you would expect. But at that point of time, there was nothing showing other than a big yellow rectangle, but no content. So people like look once in this big colored block and say, well, this is not interesting.
And then scroll down, yeah.
Exactly. So this entire thing was supposed to be the main promotion, got in fact zero attention because it took like 3 seconds to appear.
And interestingly, talking of loading time, you know, as a search engine optimizer, it's interesting that Google recently have sort of explicitly stated that they're looking at page load times now as a bit of a ranking factor. Do you think this is kind of Google finally catching up with that kind of web, you know, trying to make, like you say, the experience more positive? Or do you think that's kind of just a selfish, reduce the cost of their infrastructure? Because if the pages are quicker to load and that there's less load on their servers, as it were.
No, I think it's actually a good thing. I think what Google is, first of all, Google has actually always understood that speed is of the essence. I mean, Google is one of the fastest sites on the planet to appear. And you'll even notice that they say how long it took to do a search. And I actually once was discussing this with Larry Page, and I kind of said, well, you don't actually have to put this stuff on the page because if it's fast, people know it's fast. You don't have to tell them it was fast. But he actually said, well, I still want to have this, how many, like it took 0.2 seconds to do the search, because that's for us internally something that keeps it being a primary importance, that we are speed, speed, speed. Mm. And so they've actually always done that and themselves, being very speedy. And that, I think, is one of the reasons for their great success. But what Google also needs to do is, of course, not just be fast, but also give you good results fast. Otherwise, it would be no good. Giving bad results fast would kind of not be very useful. So they need to give you good results. And in sort of the early days, I think good results really just meant relevant sites, the sites that were about your problem or your question. Mm-hmm. But I think today we've moved on past that to also question, how well do these sites serve users in solving their problem? And so we need to know not just is this a highly ranked site in the sense of having sort of in theory valuable information or highly rated information, but is it also one that helps users acquire this information? And again, it really is the difference between kind of theoretical or hypothetical information and true communication. So communication is what gets through the skull of the user. And we know that speed is one of the great criteria there, because if it's very fast to navigate a site, like every time you click on a link, you just get it, then people actually navigate more. They find more. They understand more. The more you have to sit and wait, the more your short-term memory just degrades. You know, I mean, that's just a basic characteristic of human psychology, is that our brains don't hold information for very long. It just fades very, very quickly. So even like 10 seconds to move between pages means that when you arrive at the next page, you've forgotten a little bit of what you had on the previous page. And so therefore, you will be less successful in using the site. So anyway, back to your question. I really think it is a very valuable thing to rate sites for speed when you decide how high up they should rank on the search results page.
And I mean, one of the hugest success stories of the last couple of years in terms of the web is Wikipedia, really. And I know that you have a reputation for your particular style of design, kind of a sparse textual design. You have a reputation for, which seems to do quite well. Do you think that Wikipedia's success has got a lot to do with that? Because to me, as a kind of, I'm by no means an expert on usability, but I can see that there's definitely a similarity in styles there between the two approaches.
Right, exactly. I would say I think Wikipedia probably could use a little bit more graphic design and be a little kind of prettier, if you will. But it actually it's great confirmation that the visual appearance is not the main criterion for success in the web. I mean, comparing an ugly and a pretty site, the pretty will do better. But what you compare is a useful site versus a useless site, and the mm-hmm. useful one will do better. Or a site where you can find the information versus one you cannot find it, the one where you can find it will do better. And so those are the important things in the web. People don't really go to websites to admire them or to look at them, except maybe some art sites. But generally speaking, you go to a site to get information and to solve your problems and to buy stuff. So if a site makes it easy to find the stuff, and if it explains it well and has just good information, good answers, good prices too, of course, then that's where you'll buy, that's where you'll read, that's what the site you'll use. And you'll return to those sites too because they gave you good service. And so it really is a matter of, if you have like kind of a fixed bag of money in your budget, where should you spend that money? You should spend it on good usability, good content, good navigation, good search. You should also spend some on getting a nice layout and a good visual design. I would always say go and hire a good graphic designer, but you shouldn't lavish on that. You shouldn't make that your prime criterion. And I think those sites that emphasize kind of some of the bare bones design quite often tend to be among the very most popular ones.
And yeah, I mean, to go about that kind of bare bones approach, I read an interview with yourself in Business Week talking about CEOs and Twitter, and I kind of agree with you with the point that it's difficult for them to communicate with their stakeholders in 140 characters, where potentially you've got quite a lot going on there. But I wonder what you make of the kind of Spartan design to a certain extent that that Twitter use, in terms of rather than being complicated like Facebook or many social sites, they've tried to keep it relatively simple. Do you think that works quite well? Or do you think that Twitter, because you've got that constant stream there, kind of any benefit that they get from being simple, they lose because of the sheer volume of content that they've got to deal with?
Well, I think actually both are true. I mean, it has great simplicity in certain ways. So as a user, as an author or somebody who contributes to Twitter, you don't really have to do any design, just like go in the little box and type in, one or two sentences and you're done. And so this makes even lower demands than having a blog where you actually have to write kind of postings and think about a little bit of maybe tagging or something like that. Twitter is just pure, write a piece of text and you're done. No design whatsoever. And that makes it easier for people to just post anytime something comes to mind. And that, again, makes for a great flow of content there. So that's one of the reasons they have become so popular. And because there is so much content, again, it means that very often your friends will be online because it's not such a big burden for them as it would be to run a website. Mm-hmm. And so you can keep in touch with your friends better on Twitter. But if we think of it from more of a company perspective, more of a commercial use of the Twitter, then you get into trouble because it's very hard to find anything there. It has atrocious findability, no real structure to it, no way of saying, let me find all this type of companies, or even if you just want to search for a company, quite often any random other thing with the same name or similar names will come up. You don't know which one is the official feed. They're trying to actually address some of those type of questions with approved names and stuff, but it's not very good in the more bigger scope of things in terms of usability. So, and of course, the limitations on the posting size, mm-hmm. the famous 140 characters, it drives more traffic because it's easy to just post a little throwaway comment. It also drives less thoughtful comment often. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to what I actually said to Business Week in terms of, should it be used for more kind of strategic communication? And there the answer is no, because if you are the head of a company, particularly a big company, your job is really to communicate the vision. And that requires a little more, you know, than you can do in a tweet. So it's good for news. It's good for sales or last-minute offers. So there's a lot of business use of Twitter that's fine, but not so much.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So kind of that more strategic or in-depth type of communication.
And I know over the years you've had an interesting relationship with Flash, and you know you were quite critical at some stages, but you've worked with them and the like since. I wonder what you made of the kind of recent argument that's being put forward with HTML5 and Apple not using Flash on their devices and HTML5 for YouTube and the like. What you felt the future was like for Flash as kind of a web language, as it were.
Right. I really think that there are two separate problems. And the one is what's appropriate use of multimedia on the web. And the second one is what technology or language should be used to provide that. Mm-hmm. And so going to the first, which is actually my main interest, which is the user experience, what is appropriate multimedia? That's where Flash was being abused so horribly 10 years ago. And I mean, like the intro screens and
splash pages are a nightmare.
And all the like so many animations that didn't have any value other than annoying people. Mm-hmm. There's still some of that to this day as well. And I think that's one of the reasons Flash got a bad name. On the other hand, it could also be used for good purposes. Like, for example, it had a very nice way of promoting videos, showing videos. So for several years, Flash was the main way of doing video. And video has, well, that can also be abused, but video has a lot of good uses on the internet. And also, it was also a way to build certain forms of smaller applications that was also could add a lot of useful functionality to websites. Or even take a case like in e-commerce, the ability to have multiple views of a product. You know, you can't hold the product, you can't touch the product, but at least you can see multiple views, not just one photo. So that can be done poorly in terms of like the incessantly spinning view, which is not useful, or it can be more like zoom in or see alternate angles, which can be good. So anyway, so I think the useful or good use of Flash has been on the increase over this last decade, and partly because, you know, I did run a big campaign against it when it was at its worst, and did get to some agreement with them that they wanted to emphasize more the good uses. Now, then there's a second question of how should you implement multimedia in Flash or HTML5 or let's say some third technology? Mm-hmm. And I think there, honestly, I think the reason Apple is so much against Flash is more that it's not something that they control. I don't think that that's really a... It's not because Flash can also be used poorly, because you can use HTML5 poorly as well and put terrible videos or terrible things on your site, and it's done in Apple's, you know, preferred technology. So the technology doesn't really drive whether the user experience is good or bad. That's determined by the content design and the visual design and what you choose to do with that technology. And I actually think that Flash by now is pretty mature. I mean, in the old days, we also had these problems that it would tend to crash more and so forth, and that I don't think happens so much anymore. It still happens a little bit, but, you know, I think it's actually a pretty decent technology by now. Also, another problem with Flash in the early days was accessibility. So for users with various disabilities would have trouble using Flash content, and that has also been solved. So today, I think it's really just Apple being kind of envious of the success of anybody else.
Yeah, no, strategic rather than because it's actually something for the good of their users there. So, I mean, you've been an advocate of web usability for, you know, for you know, 10, 15 years now. Do you ever find it frustrating that, you know, so many people take so long to implement these things that, you know, to yourself and a lot of people within the usability community seem common sense, and that there's the data there from eye tracking and testing and all the like that proves that it doesn't work, yet still web developers go out and charge their customers and implement these bad practices?
Completely. I find it very frustrating, and I think that why make old mistakes? At least make new mistakes. I mean, if you want to try something new, that's fine. It's always dangerous when you try something new, because it may go well, it may go poorly, but you can then test that and maybe you'll be lucky and do something new and wonderful. But doing something that's an old mistake that's been documented for 10 years to be wrong, that I think is just stupid. I mean, that's just a waste of everybody's money to spend resources putting things out there that's just going to discourage your customers from using your website. And yet we see that so much. And you know, in big things and in small things, like the bigger things that really keep really irking me is the bad communication, like not accepting that the web is a customer-driven medium. And so tell people the information they need. So in the area of business to business or B2B, it's so common for websites to be completely vaporous, not have any concrete information about the products or services, particularly the price. We've done a lot of studies now with B2B customers, and they say, like, when they go to a website, tell me the price. I want to know, is this, you know, a cheap little package and it's going to cost me, let's say, £10, or is it something that costs £10 million and it's only for really big enterprises? Well, tell me, and they know that the exact amount of money that they may end up paying at the end might be determined more by a negotiation or by special pricing and so forth. But just give me the rough idea is something that users really, really want. And yet, still nobody does that. And that's kind of, those are some of the bigger things, like actually communicate in a customer-driven way. Understanding this is not an old one-way media form like television advertising, where you just kind of make a look good. Oh, look how nice we are. This is a two-way medium, and people go to your site for a reason, with a problem, with a request, and you better answer that. So this, for so many years, a lot of companies still don't get that basic characteristic of the web. And then there are all the small things too. And again, I've written about them so many times. Like, just one that really comes to mind is that in preparation for our conference in London here in a few weeks, I did a study of the three British big parties' email newsletters before the election. And so how do you sign up for these newsletters and stuff? And a lot of them violate so basic criteria. Like, for example, you're supposed to tell people how often they're going to get the email, so they can judge, you know, do I want to get a weekly email? Do I want to get a daily email? And some people want the daily. I mean, there may be very big, huge interest in politics. Others say, I want some information, but not too much. And they don't tell any of that in advance. What happens is that people then get discouraged from wanting to sign up because they fear, and actually rightly so, as it turns out, in some cases, that they will just be inundated with email, and then they don't want to do it. Or something that I wrote about 7 years ago is that don't have a link on a page that links to this, that same page, so that when you click on it, nothing happens, because it's very confusing. So never have a link on a page that links back to that same page. Mm-hmm. And yet, two out of the three parties made that simple mistake that I said I've been documented for at least, I mean, I know I wrote about it 7 years ago. Mm. And so for at least 7 years, and plus it's just common sense too.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that I wrote about it. So for 7 years or more, this common sense thing has been well known, and yet two out of three big political parties in the UK make that mistake in an important election campaign. So, I mean, it just keeps going like that. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, even to go on that price one, coming at it from a search perspective, I know on a number of projects I've worked on, both, you know, as client projects and personal projects, there's search volume for those kind of terms as well. You know, like, you know, people are searching for what things cost, as it were. So, you know, cost of, you know, consultancy service or whatever it is. People are searching around those terms. So there's a search opportunity there by, you know, being clear about it. It helps your users when they land there, they, you know, they can understand what you sell, but also you can get new customers who you wouldn't have got otherwise just by being upfront about that as well. So
completely the clearer you are, the more people will both come to your site because you're going to use the vocabulary they're searching for, and secondly, if they do come, they'll also tend to stay because they find what they're looking for. And it's very common. Again, it's both in B2B and also in the more consumer-oriented marketing. Mm-hmm. It's the same actually finding that when people get at a site and it has this kind of vague information, you can't really understand what they're doing, people say, oh, let me just get out of here. And then they go to the next one on the list. And that, I think, is a really important thing about the web, is that the predominant use of the web is that people go to a search engine, type their problem, get 10 answers back or 10 potential answers back plus the ads, so maybe in total about 15. And they tend to start from the top, which is why it's important to rank high. But, you know, if the first few ones don't have the information, then the third or the fourth is going to get the business.
Yeah.
And so being clear is what will ultimately drive the business.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I know my entry point into your work was your book about homepage usability. I know for a lot of our listeners, usability might be a relatively new subject to them. Is there a couple of your books or books that you've read of people in the industry that is a really good sort of entry point to usability if you've kind of never really come across the subject before and you'd like to learn a bit more about how you can, you know, make your website work so much better?
Right. Well, I mean, I certainly would like to mention my own books. My most recent book that just came out a few weeks ago is called Eye Tracking Web Usability. Yeah. That's about how to use eye tracking studies. But to be honest, that's actually not my main recommendation if people wanted to get kind of more of an introduction, because this is more like the second book you should read with some of the more advanced findings. So my recommended book is really the one that's called Prioritizing Web Usability, because that talks about the priorities you should have, as implied by the name, and the most important things you should fix on your site. So that would be my recommendation for the first book. Then maybe at the second one, go and read the eye tracking book too, if you have time for two books.
And I know you've got a conference coming up in London in a couple of weeks' time. Could you tell us a bit more about that? Is that...
Yes, that's called Usability Week 2010. So that's going to be in London on the 16th or 21st of May. And we basically have a lot of different one-day seminars about a lot of different topics. And some of them are some of the really basic ones. I think everybody should do user testing, for example. So we have a day that teaches you how to do user testing yourself. You don't have to go and hire, you know, an expensive consultant, even though we would happily do it as well. But, you know, we try to teach people how to do it themselves. And we also cover things like information architecture, how to write for the web, brand tone of voice online, those type of things. And also something I think is really kind of more of a newer things, like how to take social features and integrate them with a mainstream website. So not these kind of, you know, tweet and what you had for lunch, but rather how can you do it in a useful way for business. And finally, I think one thing I think is really exciting to me is that we've done a lot of studies of of sort of the newer generation of mobile phones, like the iPhone and so on. And so we have an entire day on how to design for the iPhone.
Oh, okay, really good. And is that just in London, or because I saw on your website it travels around, or is London kind of one of the last ones internationally on that side of things?
It is. We're also going to be in San Francisco in June, and then in Toronto and Canada in August. So we do cover a few different places.
Cool. That's great for the listeners out in Canada and America there. So no, definitely. Thanks for that. I really appreciate it. Hopefully, for the listeners, that's a great introduction in terms of some of the things you should be thinking about from a user experience side of things. And yeah, hopefully you've learned a lot there.
Thank you. That's great questions.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.